January 17th, 2013, in Dubai, meeting with teachers.
Actually, just give you a little background on how we are running the classes. Basically, as she said, there are about 60-70 classes which is run all over Dubai, with a mixed group, with a mixed background, ethnic background, and also a mixed age group. So, and we're trying to cater to only the spiritual aspect. We're not looking at any material education as such. And till now, it was just basically focusing on shlokas and a little of the philosophy. But what Srivallabh and Sitacharu Mataji now envisage is that we want to formalize it a little. So Saji Mataji and they have worked on a book to cater to the children. We've just kind of got a rough print of the whole book. And we wanted some ideas on how we should go about the curriculum, basically. We have a program of 2 hours once a week.
Have you seen the Sunday school curriculum? Tapasvini Sunday school curriculum?
No.
I know I brought it last time. Did I think I have a sample in there?
Did that you I just this gave yourself, Mataji? You put this together?
No, actually, it's got a lot of material from Mataji. Because earlier, that's what we Srivallabh Prabhu wanted from your material to take it and use it for our.
These are the previous materials.
Because there's a complete Sunday school. If you look in
there, is a Sunday school.
I just gave you a sample there.
I gave you
the whole set.
Yeah.
You got the whole set from Tapasvini. Why don't you just use that as a
No, we used some of it, but then Srivallabh Prabhu was not.
He didn't like all of it.
Yeah, he wanted something else.
I see.
If you see that, much of it will be from your book.
From those books?
From those books.
That's not my book. That's Tapasvini's book.
I mean, that's the material that you gave.
Okay.
Some of it is different. Some of the lessons they did.
Okay, so you pulled it from Tapasvini stuff to put together your own material. Yeah, they're not my books. I claim no credit for them whatsoever. I'm just the messenger.
Sunday school.
Yeah, that's just a sample.
Actually, these are the things which I got it from Srivallabh Prabhu previously, Mataji. The one which you gave is the curriculum material.
Yeah.
This is the one. But. All these materials, I have it.
I had given you before. Yeah. Okay, I wasn't sure what I'd given you before and what I'd given you now.
This is also from some other.
Actually, this is what I have. Everything from Mataji.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yes,
we will approach it.
This looks like.
That's what I said. There's something from.
Yeah, they're pulling up from all different places.
Yes.
So what specifically would you like us to do for you tonight?
Give us some ideas on activities which could be carried out in the class, if you could.
Okay. Well,
But like she was explaining, the issue with that we are facing here is each class has children from the age group of 4, sometimes to the age group of 13.
Okay.
And we just have a 1.5 or sometimes very few classes are 2 hours.
2 hours, yeah.
We spend about 20 minutes teaching them some bhajan and chanting.
Mm-hmm.
Then we spend another 20 minutes on shloka because we have a shloka book which every year we complete 24 shlokas.
Why do all of you have mixed ages? Because you're taking different geographical locations?
Yes.
Yeah.
We don't have enough teachers in those locations. Some locations we have.
You can split them a little bit. Okay.
So we have like 3 groups or 2 groups according to the availability of teachers. But not everywhere we have that luxury.
So, and it's the weekends that we usually have our classes. So we have whoever is around our house, we have all those children coming to our house. it's like a Sunday class where, you know, the children are not willing to go very far also for their classes.
And if we split it, again, the problem, even if we have resource, the parents are not willing to drop one child here, one child somewhere.
Yes.
It's all just too complicated.
Some of them just send because they have to send, and they're relieved.
They're getting a 2-hour free babysitting.
Yeah, this year we just started.
But there's a resistance for that also.
So you, I think before we go on to the specific, you can tell us how we can deal, how teachers, because it's a challenge for the teachers also.
Basically the mixed age group, which
okay,
is
okay, so you're looking at two things you'd like from us. One is some specific activities and specific teaching methods, and the other is how to deal with multi-level.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I could start with multi-level, and then probably Pranapu and I can both talk about activities. I gave you here my festival books, and those have a lot of activities in them.
Okay.
You've got in those books hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of activities. And many of them can be done with mixed age groups. So we have divided them up by age. So we have some listed for mixed ages and some divided up by age. But even the ones divided up by age, you could do some of those with mixed age groups at your discretion. Yeah, like there. So all those festival books, there's hundreds of activities in them.
That's what we've kind of tried to do in that. We have a lesson.
Yes.
What we try to do is take one lesson, but the activities were different for different groups.
Yes. Yes. So that's how these festival books are arranged, so that it's one topic, one lesson, and different activities for different groups, and some you can do combined. So I taught multi-level classrooms for 22 years as an academic school. So we had, you know, everything, English, math, science, social geography, history, everything. And sometimes I had assistants and sometimes I didn't.
Mm-hmm.
So I had anywhere up to 30 kids from age 5 to 18.
Mm-hmm.
So I had several different ways of dealing with it. One was we did some things as a whole group. Not much. So a few things. We learned slocas as a whole group, and we did public speaking as a whole group, and then we did some festival projects, which is the kind of thing we have in these festival books. So, for example, all the students were making a papier-mâché hill for Govardhan Puja, but the little kids were making one hill, and the middle kids were making another hill, and the older kids were making another hill. So everybody's making a hill, but you know, divide different levels. Yeah. So that would be, you know, one thing is we're all doing as a group. The other thing is we have the same topic, but everybody's working. There's smaller groups, and they usually have to do some sort of project that they're working on, and then I'm circulating between the groups, helping them. And then the other way I would do it was individual. So we're all doing one topic, but each student has their own individual thing that they're doing at their level. So a whole group, smaller groups, and individuals. And in order to do any of that, the main thing that I had to do was planning. I had to be able to go into the classroom with everything already
prepared.
And I would spend my vacation times organizing materials and writing materials and planning and getting everything together. That's what I did when there was no school. Of course, I was doing school every day, but if you're just doing school once a week and having things that you can pass out to the children and materials that you can pass out to the children so that you're not scrambling. Other things you can do with the whole group, of course, is dramas, although the little children will drive you crazy. I'm sure you've experienced. The moment that you're not directly working with the little children, you know, the moment that you're not, that they're not doing something. So when you have a drama, if you have a scene with the older kids, then your little kids are, bouncing off your walls and fighting and running around and getting lost and who knows what they're doing. So that's a little challenging. Also, of course, you can have older kids teach younger children. And the thing to remember about that is if the age difference is not too big, then your teaching child is learning more than your taught child.
Yes.
If you have a 15-year-old teaching a 5-year-old, the 15-year-old isn't learning that much. But if you have a 7-year-old teaching the 5-year-old, the 7-year-old is learning more than the 5-year-old. So you don't think, oh, I'm wasting the older child's time and only the younger child's benefiting. It's not like that. The older child's actually benefiting more. So we did also a lot of that. The other thing that I did was I would mystically expand myself by using things like video and audio. So I'd have certain classes that were on audio tape or certain things that were on video, and I could have this group looking at a video and doing some exercise with that, and this group doing some exercise with some audio tape, and this group I'm working with personally, and this group is doing a research project. So I also sort of expanded myself as a teacher in that way. But again, that all takes planning. Now, once it's there, once your planning's done and your stuff's there, you know, then it's easy. Another thing I did was keep very careful records of what I was doing. So I had a plan book so I could keep track of what every student was doing for whatever projects and stuff that I had.
Do you have a planned format which we could have or something?
For an academic school rather than for a Sunday school.
Okay.
So all my formats...
Yeah, basically, yeah.
They were for an academic school, number one, and number two, in America with American resources.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Okay.
So that's...
What about that Mataji from Oman?
Yes.
She had
Padmini.
Yeah, I got her stuff, and I looked at it, and I would say it's nice stuff, but it's not going to help them with their situation. It's basically just stories with questions.
Hmm.
Yeah, stories with comprehension questions. Whereas what you'll see, like
actually,
in the Balaram book, where there's different levels of activities, and so you tell a story and then you can give the kids different things to do for comprehension afterwards. I mean, we should make many more. If you want to look at the end of toward the end of the any thoughts on multi-level?
Yeah. Think of the things that you can do, because you've already said it, but think of all the things you can do that are together. The singing, the bhajan is together. You don't have to be in different levels for bhajan. Maybe to learn the bhajan, you do, but the singing together, we learn the shloka together. We can learn the shloka together. They're going to pick it up some faster than others. You can do the story together.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want to set up a program, say, okay, we start with bhajan. That's what you do. You start with the bhajan, and then you have your shloka, and then your story. And then what you do after that is where you have to differentiate, where you have to say, okay, what are these 13-year-old kids going to do with this lesson today?
Mm.
And I would use them to teach. You encourage them to take responsibility, and they'll feel good about themselves, and that they're a teacher, and that there should be a qualification for them to be the teacher. They should have to know 25 shlokas, or they should have to know all this Krishna Lila, and then they can come to this platform of being a teacher, or whatever you call it. Give them a title, and then they would teach a group. If you've got 20 kids, they could be teaching 10 kids, and then you could be dealing with
just
really junior ones,
isn't it? The other question I would ask is, give you a little bit more idea of what we calculated with the number of classes that we have in a year and the number of hours we spend with children. In a year we can stretch to about 20 hours of learning, apart from what you said, like we do the shlokas together, we do the bhajans together, and we do the story also. And then the rest of the activity that we want to do individually with the groups is...
Only 20 hours.
About 18 to 20 hours.
That's not very much.
My question was, within this 18 to 20 hours, and we have another issue is, every year we have new children. So like if we have done something this year, next year a new child comes, he doesn't know what's been done the last year.
And he's so joining the same group again. Oh, you know, there are children who have been attending for 2 years, and we'll have three new children with that.
Well, that what I do with slokas was I went through the same, we have in the era Bhagavad Gita book, and we went through the same 48 slokas in the Bhagavad Gita every year.
Mm-hmm.
And the newer children would take a couple years to learn them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we wouldn't slow down too much for the newer children, but they'd pick up. But if you've only got 18 to 20 hours a year, it wouldn't take that long to put together a written curriculum, right? I mean, 18 to 20 hours of instruction?
Yes. Yes.
It wouldn't take that long to put together something
yes.
that then you just have in hand.
Yeah.
And you could even have, you know, you have for each age group, and then you could even have special stuff for the new kids in each age group.
Mm-hmm.
So you could break up your age groups, you know, into 4 or 5 different groups, and then create materials for the repeat students and materials for the new students. Maybe like 3 levels in each group, beginning, intermediate, and advanced.
Mm-hmm.
And that way each student can, or each group can get their own stuff to work on. And I mean, that wouldn't take that long. To produce something like that wouldn't take more than a month.
Mm-hmm.
How do you mean 20 hours? It's 52 weeks in a year.
We don't work function for 52. We work only about 26
weeks. 26
weeks. And then we have festival, like we have a festival next week.
Yeah.
So
we know there are 2-3 weeks where they are preparing for that.
Then we have competitions.
We have summer holidays when we don't work.
We have summer holidays, they're traveling.
Yeah.
And then when the children have exams, they don't come. We have a Hindu festival, say if Diwali is there, they won't come for 2-3 weeks. So
2 or 3 weeks to Diwali.
It's not like
in this part of the world, parents give more importance to other activities like tennis class, and
yeah.
then in these classes they easily skip, like they don't give that. I mean, that's the experience with all the teachers. So it's difficult to catch up.
So the next thing I would ask is, in now since you understand that we have only this, what are the areas where we have to give emphasis? Like what our plan earlier was that we were taking, we were talking about children from, I think 4 to 8, and then 8 to 12, and 12 to 16, and then trying to transit, you know, send them into the youth classes that we are having.
Mm-hmm.
So we were trying to see something, syllabus that would take them into gradually into this thing. So what is it that we should emphasize?
Well,
what's
in your youth classes that you're preparing them for?
The youth right now are doing Bhagavad Gita, and some of them they've attended Bhakti Shastri as well. They're doing really well, all of them.
And they do Mahabharata,
yeah,
like that.
Yeah.
They take topics and
they're attending even the disciple course that we're having.
Uh-huh.
So they're very good.
How old are you? 16?
Even older, Prabhu. Even older than me.
16 to, yeah, 16, some of them are
older. 25.
Yeah, some of them are working.
Some of them are working.
So what age range, from what to what?
Like from 16 to about
21, 22,
20,
that's it, yeah.
Maximum
25.
25,
yeah.
25 is maximum.
Maximum,
yeah.
Maximum.
We have to.
Well, what do they need? What knowledge and skills do they need to be able to get the most out of the youth program, is your question.
Yeah.
Yes,
yes.
You would be able to answer that question better because you know what your youth program entails.
They should know Bhagavad Gita,
basic
philosophy.
Basically, the basic philosophy. I like your suggestion about these 48 shlokas, which could be concentrated on, and you could repeat them. What happens is, like if you've done something 2 years back, some of the children tend to forget what we've done 2 years back. Because
I'll tell you how that book happened. So in our Gurukul, we were trying to teach the children all 700 verses in Bhagavad Gita. And the Gopi Purandanapu, the Sanskrit scholar, visited our school one time. And he said, how many slokas do your children know? And I was very proud. And I said, they know all 700. And he said, well, give me one of your best students. So I brought out one of my best students. And he asked her for specific verses, and she had a hard time doing them, because she was learning them just in order. So she could recite them all in order, but she couldn't pull out slokas. And he looked at me and he said, better 25 slokas known well than 700 verses known poorly. So then I worked with him and Dravida Prabhu and a few other top scholars, and I said, what are the most important verses to know from Bhagavad Gita? Now, we also had a bunch of different lists. I had one list of the 100 most important slokas, one of the 50, 25, you know, all different lists. And we came up with these 48 verses. And then what we would do was we would learn one verse a week. This is in a school year, sometimes two verses a week. And every week we would also recite through all
the other ones.
All of the whole thing, which takes about 20 minutes. So maybe like once in a month you go through all the verses, and each class do one, and then you just keep going through them. So my idea was like when I went to school, there were these songs we sang every morning glorifying America. Sometimes we would sing the national anthem, but not only the national anthem. There were other songs. Oh, beautiful, for a spacious sky. I still remember all of those songs. I could sing all of them to you, and I'm sure you'd be thrilled. But how is it that I can remember these songs, even though I basically haven't sung them for 40 years, but I could sing any of them? Mm-hmm. Why? Because every day we were repeating them. And we had a cycle of like 5-6 songs we were going through, and we were singing them over and over and over in my whole childhood. And I thought, well, this is what I would like for our children. So I've talked to kids who went to my school, and even if they graduated, you know, 20 years ago, and even if they don't keep up, they all tell me, oh, just within 5 minutes I can remember those 48 slokas. And I saw that that was a much better policy than constantly doing new and new and new and new.
That's
and new
what
and
we
new
are doing.
New.
Every year we're going with a new booklet, and then we're progressing further. And I realize that they don't know because they've not revisited them.
They will retain almost nothing.
Yeah, they retain nothing. They retain
whereas
nothing.
This way, if they have these 48, we have this really nice book, and this way, if they have these 48 verses, they'll retain them for life.
Yes.
Now you can always do extra things. You know, we have another extra, like, 20 verses in there for kids who know the 48. But even the kids who learn the extra things, they have to do the revision regularly with the whole group. So even if they're working on advanced, they must revise the 48 regularly. And then I had some other things. You don't have time, but I had some other things that I had all the kids learn. Like, I had them all learn the whole Brahma Samhita, the whole Ishapanishad. The yes. whole Upadeshamrita.
For this, Mataji, we have another group which is called Dridha Bhakti.
Okay.
Older kids who are our devotee children.
Uh-huh.
They who know of the
who can learn all those.
Yeah. So every
but again,
Friday,
those were revised.
Yeah, yeah.
So every Tuesday we would sing the whole Brahma Samhita. Every Wednesday we'd sing the whole Ishapanishad. And again, they're singing these at least once a week for years and years and years and years and years. You know, 10-15 years. And again, I find even if they don't practice it again as adults, by doing it over and over again as children, they'll remember.
And the meaning as well?
With the Bhagavad Gita verses, the only ones we didn't do the meaning so much were Brahma Samhita. And now Bhanu Swami has a new translation of Brahma Samhita that's coming out with much more people-friendly translations. Because Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati's translations are as difficult as the Sanskrit. You know, it's almost just sounds. We did learn the translations. With Bhagavad Gita, we didn't just memorize the translations, but we also discussed. So with
the
every verse we learned, we had a discussion. And in that book, there's some... You have the Bhagavad Gita book there?
Yeah.
In the Bhagavad Gita book, there's also some little discussion of the purport. Then there's also activities going. We have questions and answers.
What chapter of what?
No, what I gave you.
No, what she gave.
And Mataji, how would you assess them then?
No, it's only 4 files, Mataji. Balram activity book, goals.
No. Look, go back. Go up. You're looking at the festival books.
Okay, sorry.
And then this.
Here, the learn to read?
No.
Other colleague.
Yes.
Oh, okay. Illustrated book.
Yes. Now we also have audio for this. So there's a picture to color for each verse. It gives the meaning of the verse.
Okay.
There's activities where you can write the verse in Devanagari. We have the Devanagari there in a very large, crisp font for handwriting practice. Then we have the English of the verse in a script that they can write the script mm-hmm. for handwriting and to remember the verse. And we have, as I say, we have audio chanting of all of this as well. So there's family tree, and then there's reviews at the end. So this can be a book, you know, every kid gets a copy of the book, and yes. it's something that they can keep themselves.
This is for the 48 verses.
Yes, so here you see. So okay, so here's, let me make it. Okay, so here's an illustration. And
is it projected?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, well, here, can you all see this?
Yeah, okay.
Can you see
yeah.
the verse in Devanagari?
Yes. Translation.
Right, but and it's a big Devanagari font.
Okay.
And then the picture, and here you see the handwriting. So there's a little explanation for discussion.
Okay.
It's like a little summary of the purport. And then here it is in the handwriting font for the kids to copy the handwriting font. It's Danilian handwriting.
That's nice.
It's Danilian with the little changes so we weren't infringing on their copyright.
Okay.
It's, we actually created the font. Or I created the font. And so then we also, as I say, we also have audio for that. So here's another, you know, there's Matra Sparsha Stukantaya. And each of them like that. So for each verse.
This is lovely.
And then there's also, as I said, an additional 20 verses that we list. And at the end, there's questions and answers and discussion on the Bhagavad Gita. And we just cycle through this again and again and again and again and again. And if there was a new student, then they just joined the group.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. And I didn't find it difficult to have, you know, I taught this for years and years and years with mixed age groups and with new kids coming in. And
since we have the illustration, then we can show them and we can play a game with it that, okay, this illustration is for which shloka.
Well, it would be really nice, in fact. I mean, that's another, Ram Giridhari, that's another kind of game we could, you know, we can have a game that went with this book, for example.
Yeah. Really nice. So, Mataji, like, we take assessments of students. We say, come on, chant the first five shlokas.
Yes.
So, how do you do your assessments?
Well, with this, each kid would have to recite the verse. I mean, but I don't know if you have time for that.
No, we actually is a lot specific time. That is later on that we're going to assess you on so-and-so day with so many shlokas.
Okay.
So, do you see their pronunciation? Do you see if they are stammering?
Yes.
And what do you see when you're assessing them?
Yeah, how they're pronouncing it, whether or not they forget anything, all that kind of stuff. The other thing we do, we don't have that in this book, but the other thing that I did for many years was have someone who knows Bharatanatyam give you mudras for each part of the verse.
Yeah.
Give you actually authentic mudras and have the children recite the verses with the proper mudras at each point. And that way it really helps them learn the meaning and it makes a wonderful stage presentation. You know, if the kids can go on stage and recite the verse and, you know, Arjuna Uvacha, they can act it out.
Yeah.
It doesn't look that clear.
Yeah.
So it's fuzzy.
You can focus on that.
Yeah, the projector needs to be focused.
It's fine.
Where's the...
Yeah, the more, right?
Oh, it's up there.
Feature not available.
It's not available.
It is a font
there.
No,
it's fixed.
It's a PDF.
No, you're doing it. It's a
percentage. But that's not gonna change it. It's fuzzy.
It's blurred. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just fuzzy.
It's
make it 100%. Yeah. Yeah. It's
okay, a little bit. Better. Little bit, but it still looks blurry.
Make it 100.
And as I said, we have audio to go with it, and the audio is very slow and with children singing. And there it is, his handwriting.
Oh, his lovely handwriting.
Yeah.
It's really nice.
And that was one of the activities we would do, was they would, you know, write the verse, and as they're writing it, they're also repeating it.
They could also start writing in the Balram form. Well, the children do that. They've picked up.
You mean the Roman transliteration?
Yeah, yeah. Transliteration. Yeah.
And
yeah.
Here again, here's the, you know, the picture. To go with the verse. So each verse, and a little caption for each picture. Mm. It gives you a little something you can discuss. Mm-hmm. And then here's a little explanation of things, some ideas of what you can discuss with the kids for each verse. And then if we go, okay, so here we're still on that. Try to get to past the verses. And all those can be colored.
These shlokas are from different chapters, Mataji?
Yes, there's. We don't have one from chapter one. Other than that, there's at least one sloka from each chapter. Okay, now here we have the sheets where they're all one right after another. So we had first, you know, two pages for each one, two or three pages for each one with the three, I guess, with the illustrations. And then here, all 48 verses are just one right after another. So when you're going through your revision, then you can just use these pages. There's also pages of instructions from the teacher. Okay, so here we have a summary of each chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. Oh,
this is good. Yeah, we don't have all this.
So the philosophy is also taken care. The philosophy is also taken care of.
And here's questions on each chapter for discussion.
It's very nice. And if you need a philosophy book, you don't need this book.
And here's some ideas for teaching. You know, various ideas for teaching. Some quotes from Srila Prabhupada. Then we also have, I don't remember what page it's on, we also have a list of an extra 20 verses if you want to go beyond the 48. Yeah. So I don't remember what page that's on.
The answers also given.
Yes. This is the end. There's questions without answers in one place. This is the very end of the book. So this is the answer. So you can rip that out of the back or just not print it, and you just keep that for the teacher. This is the answer key for the teacher. And then I can give you the audio too. I realize the audio is not on here.
Okay.
There's a really, really nice audio I could get for you.
So, Mataji, in 1 year, how many shlokas would you complete?
I've tried to do all 48 every year and cycle through them every year.
48 shlokas.
Do all 48 every year, and every year keep cycling back through them again.
Yeah.
You know, if you can't do that, then do half.
Half and half.
Yeah, you do anyway 24.
Yeah, we do 24, so we repeat so then 24, you could 2 years.
In 2 years, you'd go through the whole thing, but at least once a month, revise all 48. And even the children who haven't learned some of them, when they hear everybody else reciting them together,
they learn.
And you can give them the audio to take home, and play.
That we are doing even now, we are doing it. So we could do the same.
Let me write, just maybe you could talk to them about something for a minute. Let me go get the audio of this, and I'll give that to you right now.
One other thing for petition.
No, she's given us a soft copy. And
our
booklet.
You just printed out a
soft copy. You have a soft copy.
Just don't take me like
No. The shloka booklet. We have a shloka booklet separately from this, where it's given according to the age group. Each age group has a different number of shlokas. Approximately around 24 shlokas for the year are learned by each child. But the following year, we don't, as she said, we don't repeat. We go to the next chapter. This is done chapter wise. That you do for chapter 1, then the next year's chapter 2, then next chapter 3.
I feel there should be
so we're not repeating any of the shlokas. So the children tend, as I told her, the children tend to forget what they are doing.
Bhajan. We do it
Chaitanya Charitamrita.
Your thing is like that.
Yeah, my...
Yes.
That is, for example, even shlokas every year I've been trying to say.
From the beginning.
What's the point? We just make them repeat like parrot and then they're finished. It's gone.
This is much better, Mataji, that you're doing philosophy.
We don't test them on the philosophy. We don't test
why them. I asked is that if they stammer, we cut their marks, which is wrong.
I've been protesting.
Which is wrong.
I didn't want to be a judge at all.
I never would agree.
Because our
my own daughter was like this.
See, our objective is that they know the shloka, not necessarily the recitation. In public speaking,
how many of us know how to pronounce
perfectly? Nobody. You make a mistake in the second shloka.
First, I think philosophy is important, and then the rest of the time we can do activities with them. This Govardhan paper mache is such a good idea, which Mataji said.
Just based on this, you can devise activities.
Yeah. Last year, just based on
this, and this illustration idea is superb.
Yeah. See, for example, last year I was
selected.
We are doing 8th chapter now. Okay, Anta Kalejama. I have a new student who doesn't know what is the soul, what is body thing. How do I teach him Anta Kalejama? It's impossible. It just becomes meaningless to teach him.
No, we're just giving him. We're just giving him.
I know. I mean, I have not been very happy with the way we've been.
No, in this part.
I like this idea.
Even I like
but
this.
But that's why I've got, I just immediately said, I don't know, that repeating thing 48.
Even I like this repeating idea
a
lot.
It's a lot. Shivala Prabhu's father.
It doesn't have that pressure on us to complete a syllabus. You know, you're...
See, and I'm saying the children don't need to actually know Chaitanya.
There is a translation of these verses.
No, not necessary.
It's just too much.
Because they're not from...
It's written by...
They're not... It makes no importance for them, actually.
We should first introduce them to Chaitanya slowly, and then when we're talking about that, we can give some few important... Not a memorized...
In the story form, give it to them. Actually, this doesn't have enough stories also.
No, she's given other books.
I was just saying that there's a devotee called Kalakanta Prabhu, and it's on the database. It's called the Song of the Lord or something like that.
Oh, the Song of the Lord.
If you have the database, he has... He poeticized each of the verses in Gita and a few cantos of Bhagavatam. And they're very beautiful verses, the way he did it. It's easy to learn. Sometimes a bit hard to learn the English translation from the Bhagavad Gita. A little philosophical, it's a little bit difficult language. If English isn't your first language, a bit difficult, but if it's a poem, it's like a song, you're just learning a song.
It's got music with it, Prabhu?
No. I mean, the kids will pick up, but...
It's just a tune.
It's got a certain meter. Okay.
Like how Dravida Prabhu has his...
Yeah. How
Dravida.
Dravida Prabhu. He's done many poems, like poem of Shikshastakam and poems. Very beautiful. Dravida said he will give any of the poems, if you write to him, he'll give them to you.
Okay.
Very, very good. To learn the poems. We learn Gita shlokas differently. Every school has a different approach to learning shlokas.
Many Dravida Prabhu has brought a whole point
this
on
is
Mukundama Stotra. He has got a translation of Mukundama
Stotra.
Dravida Prabhu is a proper disciple.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
He is a major of Los Angeles.
Okay.
Entire Mukundama Stotra is written in English. And it's very nice. All glories to the Lord in Vrindavan forest place. All glories to the Lord in Vrindavan forest place. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Very nice. He sang very nicely. It's very superb. He is very good in poems. And this is actually Mukundama Stotra.
The song of God is written by whom, Prabhu, you said?
Kalakanta. It's here, Mataji.
Okay.
Let's get this. This is a we learn two chapters. All of our kids in our school learn two chapters every all the time. One is 12 and one is 15.
And I think he may have his recording version.
So this is his one. Yeah. So that you can understand the Vedas perfectly, now I shall describe a most peculiar banyan tree, branches reaching down, roots extending in the air. These comprise the Vedic mantras sprouting
everywhere.
And they learn, kind of, our kids would sing this with mridanga and kartals fast.
How would they sing this?
Sing it. So that you can understand the Vedas perfectly, now I shall describe the most peculiar banyan tree. Branches reaching down and roots extending in the air. Roots comprise of Vedic mantras, sprouting
everywhere.
So, fast.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
But it's the, we found this was much easier for them to learn the English in the Bible.
Yes, yes. The translation. It's easier
obvious.
Than the translation.
If you're telling in poetic, it's easier to learn. Again, Gungunadeva said that as they walk around the tree.
This is in the Veda Vesa.
Yeah.
It's the it's
other,
yeah.
other. It's on, it contains on the
books
other
by
books
Iskon
by other
devotees.
Devotees.
Under books by Iskon devotees, there is a section called Soul Divine Kala Kanti Bhasa.
Okay.
It's nice. One thing I wanted to say is, every lesson should have what we call a wow factor.
Yes.
You know, if the kids go back and if the parents say, what did you do today? And
yes.
said, they say, I did this. That's what I did. You know, so they'll remember that thing. Sometimes you ask kids, what did you do today at school? Nothing. Nothing all day at school. Went to school, did nothing. For 6 hours, did nothing.
So when
so
they say nothing,
say,
that means they've not enjoyed their
day. They didn't connect.
Yes.
They didn't, there was no interesting thing. So we have to plan for something that's a wow. That was really good, and I want to go next week to do the next week.
I think, Prabhu, what we lack is because some of us are housewives and we're working, so I think we don't put in so much time.
Actually, the planning is not done so
no
well, because it's just left to each individual teacher to do the planning.
And we're very
we planning. Actually, this time we did one plan for a lesson, but we want to do what we want to do is plan out for each lesson and giving out to the teachers, so that automatically, you know, you have the wow factor, you have the objectives, you have the conclusion, and you know all these factors are automatically included within the lesson for the teachers, because some of them are not able to do it. And that's another thing which we wanted your advice on, was how do we go about training the teachers?
I think all the teachers should learn how to tell a story properly.
Yes.
Not read a story. When you read a story, then everyone goes to sleep.
Yeah.
It's like Bhagavad Gita is it's cure for insomnia.
Yeah.
And everybody snoring already. So you have to learn how to speak it properly, nicely. And everyone has a different style, everyone has a different pace, everybody has a different tone, everybody has different gestures.
Yes.
But you should learn the story. So you should learn the story inside out. When you learn the story, you learn a story, a simple story. To teach a point. But there should be a purpose for it. And then with the little kids, you can express that with a puppet or with something that's interactive.
Mm.
So a skit drama is really good for those kids. And you know, they like to do drama.
Mm.
So that they have a story and then immediately do something with it, interactive. It's not that, you know, we're just going to give this whole lot of knowledge. We've got 1 hour to give knowledge. Fill them up with knowledge.
No.
That'll get very bored.
I think, Prabhu, we're so mechanical. We run at 6 o'clock. 6 to 7:30 is our class.
Okay,
we finish bhajan, shloka, story. That's it. Gone.
Covered.
I think we need to...
Okay.
put some more personal touch in our classes, which
it's
we are
more planning. Actually, it's just that you just, you know, you have
I've
to
been
do
thinking
four
of
things.
Getting a puppet in my class for so many years, but I've never done it.
Get one, Rachel, get
one. Now I have to
or
get
or three, or four.
Because when I'm teaching in school, I'm using all of these things, but for this class, then I haven't done it.
So here I just gave you, I know in the one called Bhagavad Gita, there's audio, and then I gave you another folder now with more audio. Okay, that folder, and then also look in the Bhagavad Gita one and get the one that says Murari Chants Bhagavad Gita.
Not in a big, you know, big red movie camera for Hollywood production.
No, even just dressing them, giving them simple things to dress up and, you know, dramatize.
No,
well,
what
is enough for them?
Mataji's book has a very nice chance to do a role play.
Okay, here's the audio. That's all the children.
Which children, yeah.
So that's there for all 48 verses like that. First reciting the Sanskrit one person and then
repetition.
Responsive. So that's for all 48 verses. And then I also just gave you a bunch of English Krishna conscious songs. So that's another thing, is that you can teach the children English songs.
Yes,
that'll be nice.
That would be nice. Thank you,
Madhuri.
How many songs have you got?
Oh,
you mind a couple.
Trinavarta came from Kamsa, shaped like a whirlwind.
My God, we should use for
putting Krishna on his shoulders, darkening Vrindavan. Dust storm all around, baby Krishna can't be found. Yasoda is crying upon the ground.
You remember you came to Bombay for that Agasura rhymes? Everybody remember till now. Tomorrow, after tomorrow we have a festival. She did only once. You know, the kids are around. They have been, you know, remembering only once she did it. We didn't record, we didn't anything.
See, even these.
My name is Agasura. I'm fat and round. My lip is in the sky. My chin is on the ground. My wide open mouth is just like a cave. Soon it will be Krishna's grave. From my eyes fire glows, from my mouth hot wind blows. Now I am waiting to swallow you. Please come in, dear boy of blue. There's lots and lots of songs.
They're all
Vrindavan's such a nice place. Vrindavan, me and I, you may find the decorated
deep. Beautiful for my partner, very nice.
See, when it, you know, take these and then probably go through and write down the words and learn them, and then you can teach the children.
Yeah.
It is the evening, Krishna and Balaram, along with the boys and cows, are returning to Vrindavan, playing their flute. Now they're approaching Krishna and Balaram. All through the day they are in the forest. In their absence we think one moment to be like 12 years. There's so many. Then for drama, what I used to do with the mixed group, really simple. You have like a box of cloths, various cloths, you know, from old Didi clothes and this and that cloths and makeup and simple wigs and, you know, simple
just
things.
Yeah, just collection.
And then you pick a story and, okay, who wants to be Krishna? Who wants to be Rukmini? Who wants to be Rukmini? Who wants to be Shishupal? And then you do the drama right there. Okay. All right. Rukmini, you sit over there. Okay. And Rukmini, you stand over there. Now, Rukmini, you go to Rukmini, and you say, "My dear sister, I have the perfect husband for you." And they go, "My dear sister, I have the perfect husband for you." And you give them their actions and their lines, bit by bit by bit by bit by bit.
No, we do this. Yeah. We do that. Yeah.
That's something you can do with the whole group, and the kids usually love it. But yeah, puppets.
Puppets, yeah.
And you can get the kids to make puppets. And then you can do puppet shows of all the stories. But you have that as a project, you know, get the craft. Of course, people have to pay.
Yeah.
You cannot do this for free.
True.
People have to pay because it costs money to buy these materials. And then, you know, you have them make their own puppets, and then you put on little puppet shows and have the kids put on puppet shows of the different stories.
I feel our classes should be more of fun rather than... It's very monotonous. This is what I feel.
Okay, so that's monotonous means that you're teaching the children that Krishna consciousness is boring.
Monotonous, yes.
The definition of teaching is
you understand?
Repetition
yeah.
without boring.
Yes.
You have to... Repetition is important.
Oh, I like that.
Which is it's a nice... Yeah. Repetition with
different ways to get the same point across.
Present.
So through music, through the drama, through story, through discussion, through shloka.
Yeah.
That's where you have this list of different activities.
Yeah.
Did you get a copy of our list?
I had a read.
Field trips is such a lovely idea.
Which
one? Field trips.
Please remember that there's four curriculums. Always. One is your planned curriculum. That's what you say you're going to do, what you tell everybody you're going to do, what's in your books, what's in your advertisements.
Mm-hmm.
This is true for every school, everything. Then there's your taught curriculum.
Yes.
That's what you actually do, and it's never exactly the same as what you say you're going to do.
Mm.
Never. Which is a good thing, because it means you're adjusting for your audience. But there's always a difference between the planned curriculum and the taught curriculum.
Mm.
Then there's the hidden curriculum. The hidden curriculum is what you're teaching indirectly, like, are all your activities boring? Then you're teaching Krishna consciousness is boring. You never get up and you say, Krishna consciousness is a lot of fun. It's really an exciting process. Okay, kids, let's do some really exciting things here. So what you're saying you're teaching and what's in your books you're teaching, the louder message is your hidden curriculum. Your hidden curriculum is also what kind of rules you have. The hidden curriculum has to do with whether you start on time, whether or not people pay, how you dress, what sort of etiquette or lack of it there is in the classroom, what kind of materials do you provide? Do you provide photocopies that are hard to read and crooked? Do you provide really nice materials? This is all part of your hidden curriculum. The variety of activities that you do, your emotional mood, what kind of discipline you have, your relationship with the students, and all of that speaks about 1,000 to 5,000 times louder than your taught curriculum. It's like your taught curriculum is much more important than your planned curriculum. Your hidden curriculum is much more important than your taught curriculum. And then the most important part of a curriculum is your null curriculum. Your null curriculum is what you don't teach. Null, N-U-L-L, zero. What you don't talk about, what the taboo subjects are. We teach a lot about values and etiquette and culture by what's not allowed to be discussed. And for example, the materialistic secular society, you know, in a secular society, they don't talk about God in the schools. He's part of the null curriculum. And that's screaming at everybody that God is not so socially acceptable. So they'll never get up and say God is not so socially acceptable. But the fact that he's absent is giving that message. And one reason we did these books is like in the reading curriculums that are out in the market, there's no God. There's even religious festivals like Christmas and Diwali, but there's no God in them. And if as children are going through all these books year after year after year after year, they're getting the message through the null curriculum, there's something wrong with God. There's something socially improper to talk about God and do anything in relationship with God. So also in most parts of the world, they won't, like Brudakarma and Sataputta, put together archaeological evidence that's not given to the public about the antiquity of man, for example. So that's part of the no curriculum. We just don't talk about it. Or, you know, these buildings in Egypt and South America that nobody can figure out how they're built. That's not taught in school. You're never going to learn that in school. They're not going to say to you, you know, there's buildings in Peru which we couldn't build today with our present technology, and we haven't the foggiest idea how they were built. They're not going to tell you that because they're teaching you that human beings were less advanced previously. So anything that contradicts that, they're not going to teach you. And by not teaching you about it, when you find out about it later, you think, maybe it's not true. Maybe there's something wrong with this evidence. If it was good evidence, why wasn't it in the school? And by not teaching it, they prejudice you against it. So every society has things they don't talk about, including our ISKCON society. I mean, every society has things that are just like... So you've got your planned curriculum, your taught curriculum, your hidden curriculum, and your no curriculum. And as teachers, you should be looking, what's in my hidden and no curriculum? What am I teaching indirectly? Because that message is much more powerful. So if your activities are boring and you're just doing, you know, you are telling the children Krishna consciousness is boring without saying that. And if you want to actually teach them that Krishna consciousness is interesting, then your methods of teaching and the activities of teaching should be interesting. Does that all make sense to you?
Yeah.
And it may seem like it's a lot more work. It doesn't have to be. I see that there is more work required outside of the classroom to get good materials together. But once you've gotten them, you've gotten them. I don't see that you have to, you know, be planning and planning and planning and planning and planning forever. And also, once you get in the habit of teaching with a variety of media in a variety of way, it becomes second nature for you. And you'll no longer see it as some big effort on your part.
I think it's important to remember that it's for these methods are for the kids. And it's not for the teacher to become expert at manipulating and expert at orchestrating these methods.
It's for learning, not for teaching.
Yeah, it's for learning,
not for teaching.
It's really important to put the focus on their learning,
yeah,
and let them be talking and speaking about their understanding, rather than just full on, you know, telling them what it is. But let them give them plenty of opportunity to interact with the material, even amongst themselves, not just through you all the time, as where the sort of media facilitator, but let them give them time to talk and discuss things, and then make, you know, in a classroom you think that's if they're talking they're off task or something, but if you give them structured time to talk about a topic, I find it's very productive, and for them particularly, because they're articulating their thoughts about this topic, and in a group they might not feel confident to do that. But even if you've got 10 kids in a group, they might not feel confident in 10. Well, this week if you have 20, they definitely might not. There's going to be kids who won't speak in that group of 20. But they'll speak with a partner. So give them a chance in every session. If you've got a two-hour session, give them a chance to buddy up with someone and to share something. And there's different structures, methods you could do for them. And talking on a topic or discussing something or coming back. It's very important. And knowing the needs, knowing each individual child and connecting with them, that relationship is very important. And when you do it as a Sunday school type thing, or a Friday school, whatever it's called, when you do it as in this classroom, it's quite intimate. And so you get to know them, you see them every week or every second week. You get to know them and they feel good about coming because they connected with you. And they're going to come back because you made a connection with them. significant connection. But if you don't recognize them, don't look at them, don't say their name once in 2 hours, you're not going to feel too inspired to come back. I was just in Chennai, and I asked the girl about her schooling, a very intelligent girl in this house, and she said, I said, you have nice teachers? And she said, yeah, all nice teachers except for math teacher.
Yeah.
And I said, what does a math teacher do? Why don't you like math teacher? Because she just growls all the time. She just growls. So we don't like the one who growls, but I said, why do you like an English teacher? Because she's nice to us. And she asks us questions, and she knows all of our names. A math teacher doesn't know anyone in the classroom.
But also this decides whether the child likes the subject. So if, you know, the teacher is nice, the student takes a liking for the subject. Like, you know, when you go to students, they'll say, I like maths. Why? Because the teacher is good.
Yeah.
So, you know, if we are good and we have a relationship with the children, they automatically going to take up to Krishna consciousness.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
they have already, you know, bonded with us. So, you know, that bondage will take them further. So, you know, it's always when you ask a child, which subject do you like? It's related to the, you know, the kind of relationship that child enjoys with the teacher. It's nothing to do with the subject per se.
At least it starts like that.
Yeah, it
and
starts
then,
in the primary school.
Can,
it's basically
then
that,
they
yeah.
can get into the subject. After a while, they can love the subject.
Yes,
but
yeah.
yes, it starts like
yeah.
that with that relationship.
Right. We also throw some light on, like, most of the children who are coming for the classes, I think you could say about 80% are parents are not devotees, or they probably don't attend even a satsang or anything. So many of our children learn a lot of things and begin to follow, like especially regarding the food, especially meat eating. Many of the kids give up eating meat, but the parents don't. So, what could we do? We do outreach programs. We try to call the parents, but there are many children. We have experienced in Varanasi. I don't know who also must be. Children are very enthusiastic to advance and do more things, but they have such a different atmosphere at home. And they're not able to. I mean, there are children who come and tell us that I wish my father was a devotee and mother was a devotee. No, because they come and see the devotee children in our Natkat Mela or something where the whole family is doing things, and some children really are excited about seeing something like this. And when they see the devotee children talking only about Krishna and so happy and enjoying themselves. So they feel their family should also. Could you tell us some?
I think Fran Prabhu actually is more experienced with that kind of thing than I do.
What suggestions? And most of them are Indians. I mean, all of them.
All of them are Indians.
And it's just so hard to get them to, come and take a Krishna.
The parents.
Yeah.
Actually, our ultimate target through the children are the parents.
it's a good method.
But even if you never get the parents,
if you get the kids, you put the seed. That's what I believe in. That we've put the seed in the kids,
and they'll be the next generation.
Yeah, that's what my belief is.
Srila Prabhu's idea is that Bhakti Ruksha launching, and to get parents into Krishna consciousness. We want to offer Bhakti Vriksha classes to the parents of the children. I mean, that's the only way we can get them.
Prabhu if there was, if they have language situations where we could have some ideas. Just like today, we got plenty of ideas for the curriculum. So, there might be some things that.
I think in our school in Auckland, we had that that situation quite a lot. That the children will learn something at school, and they're at school for 4 or 5 hours a day, and they've got deities in the classroom, and they're offering the deities, and they're learning shlokas and they're learning stories from the Bhagavatam and the Krishna book, and they go home and tell their parents, and the parents also from Indian backgrounds mostly, but and they don't know these stories, they don't know these shlokas, and the parents actually feel very proud of their kids actually, and they feel like that they missed out on something, and after some time they will, if they're treated properly, the parents, they come around. We've seen them come, we've seen them get initiated from just going to a school, obviously they're Bhakti Bhushan, but you know, a Sunday school situation.
The parents get initiated parents from the kids coming to the school.
From the kids coming to the school. Kids come to the school and they go home every night and they're talking about Krishna. We had recently in Mayapur, in the international school, the Rodi put his three daughters in the school, and after, and the mother wasn't into it, the mother's still not into it, but after 3 weeks of, the, 2 weeks, after 2 weeks the kids are in the school, they're coming home and they're reciting shlokas at home and they're talking about Krishna, and the mother and father, it is such a contrast from the school they went to in Kolkata. In 2 weeks what happened to them, in 2 weeks it was incredible transformation in the three girls, and the father's in ecstasy, you know, it's the best school in the universe. The mother is gradually coming around too, but she sees the daughters are so happy. They were never that happy. In Kolkata they hated going to school. Nearly, this is a phenomenon in Indian schools, mostly kids get dragged to school, right? They get dragged up, get dragged out of bed, the mother dresses them, put the shoes on, pushes them into the bus, and she goes to school. They hate going to school, right?
Yes.
Most kids hate going to school in India. I've seen them in Mumbai, in Chennai, in Delhi. They hate going to school. And it's such a contrast in other school systems where the kids love to go to school. They can't wait to get to school, and the holidays is boring for them, and they can't wait to get back to school. So we give them something good, and the parents think, well, that school is important, or that Namahat group is really beneficial for my child. And naturally, I think better of the devotees. If the child's coming home happy and with knowledge and good experience, even if they don't become devotees and they chant Hare Krishna, they will feel much better. It's a next step. It's definitely adding to their Ajata Sukriti. And eventually they'll take it. It's important not to call them non-devotees.
Yeah.
I was in a school in Bali recently, and one of the teachers said to me, this girl, I was having an interaction with this young girl, and she was very bright, and I was thinking she was very, you know, intelligent and a good devotee, and the teacher came and said, in front of her, she's not a devotee. And this girl was telling me about Krishna, and she was like in total bliss, you know, she was telling me all these stories about Krishna, and the teacher said, oh, this one's not a devotee.
Now see, that's a hidden curriculum.
It's
an example of hidden curriculum. If you're going to the, if you're labeling children like that, you've got a child who's learning all these slokas and talking about Krishna and likes it, oh, but you're not a devotee. So again, that's not, you're not officially teaching something, but think what a powerful message that is.
And then you're going to interact with the parents. The parents have to, someone drops the kid off, right? So you have to, the parent will bring the child. The child's not coming on their own. So then you'll have a brief interaction.
Yeah.
Every week, another bit more interaction, and then fan that spark of the relationship. Not necessarily the first week you have to give them, you know, full Bible time and, you know, the whole like, I was in the lift today, and the girl was like, there's a Chinese girl on the lift, and an Indian man and myself. It was my first day in coming on this lift. And the Buddha's like, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna! And this Chinese girl's like, where am I? What's going on? And the door opened and she just ran out. I mean, the Indian guy was going, okay, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. He was like, cool with it. But the Chinese girl's like, well, this guy's on something. We don't have to do that necessarily. And, you know, he was saying Yadi Deka Tarika Krishna Pradesh, but there's other ways of, there's more subtle ways of Krishna Pradesh.
What would be the balance between, you know, the material knowledge and, you know, what we're giving as a curriculum for Krishna consciousness? What could be a
Well, balance. I thought you were not teaching material
we're
knowledge.
We're not taught, but what would be a good balance if we took it in a little?
I'm confused about what you plan on doing. You're not planning on starting a full-on school.
No, no.
So if you've only got 20 hours a year...
Like in your Sunday school, do you
what
really...
Why would you teach any material
nothing,
things at all?
Really? No. Okay.
I don't think so, understand why you
they're
would.
They're getting enough from their school.
Yeah, they're getting,
yeah,
enough,
they're
from
getting
the
enough from outside.
You know, if you had 100 hours a year, but you have 20 hours a year... What material things would you consider teaching? Like
no,
what?
Like reading is part of the curriculum, but you're doing along with...
I'm saying you could use these books either just for the Krishna conscious and devotional and philosophical and value content in the schools you already had.
Mm-hmm.
And if you wanted to start a program that you advertise, this is learning to read, you could also use these. Now,
uh-huh.
The Sanskrit books are something you could use,
yeah,
where Sanskrit is in one sense a material topic.
Mm.
And... You might again get kids whose parents want them to come just to learn Sanskrit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But that's,
yeah.
You know, you're really using that then as a device.
Mm.
So you're saying, okay, we're going to teach Sanskrit or we're going to teach English reading, but actually your interest is more teaching the devotional. Because I don't think you're really interested in teaching Sanskrit or teaching English reading per se in 20
yeah,
hours
perfect.
A
yeah.
year.
We may not be able to do that in all the classes, but we
yeah.
can have a Sanskrit.
At some place,
a few
yes.
class,
yes.
centralized one, where all
students
who
are
interested can
yeah.
come.
This English learning is very good. We can say that and then hidden
yeah.
curriculum.
It could be a, yeah. it could be a paid program.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes.
These could be a
paid
program
one.
So that, you know, the ones who are really interested
yeah.
could come in.
Right, so exactly, you can do like that. You can say, okay, in addition to your regular classes, you have a paid program for teaching English for young children.
Mm.
And you can advertise to the Indians, we're going to teach them English within our own culture.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these are materials that support our culture, and the same with Sanskrit. So have, you know, a Sanskrit classes and English classes.
Mm. Yeah.
So there you can, if just go up a little bit to that page 15. And you can see this is a sample... of different activities. Yeah, this is from the Nisinga book, and each of the books are divided into Panchanga Bhakti. So there's one section on Shastra, there's one section on Didi, one section on holy places, one section on holy name, one section on saintly association. And then, so for each of those five areas, we're listing all these different activities for different age groups. And then we give the resources where you can find more activities, where you can get materials to do the activities. And there's pages to photocopy to give out to the kids for all different activities. I mean, you've got enough activities in just the books I gave you for way more than 20 hours.
Mm,
in
yes.
just those four festival books, you've got a lot more than 20 hours of activities per year.
Thank you, Madhya.
Okay.
Can we take a set of these books just now for now, if you don't mind? And
these books now, where is that? The cries are available, but I don't know what to say. They're like samples they got. They're not properly printed, actually.
Okay.
There's got some defect in it. And we're going to take them to UK with us.
It's okay.
Dictionaries are available. Dictionaries are available. Yeah.
Okay.
But
yeah.
You can place orders, I guess.
You can place orders.
Yeah, okay.
Could they also order the Learn to Read through you?
Not from here. People can get it.
So if you want to learn to read, you got to go to the website.
Mm.
Yeah, Christian groups, they often do things like this. In New Zealand, the church will teach English on Tuesday and Wednesday, something
mm.
like that. Tuesday and Thursday,
yeah.
They have a big sign at the front in English, and it gets them into the church. And yoga classes, the church is teaching yoga, meditation.
In fact,
Devaki
Prabhu in Singapore was telling them, this will be the best way to get the kids in. Not telling them that we are teaching a language, Sanskrit, for them in Singapore.
You are already the two languages. Arabic is struggling with Arabic. And Hindi. So they're learning these three languages. And Arabic is French. After 7th.
So they have
you have to take a choice. You can make a choice.
Arabic is compulsory.
Arabic is compulsory.
Where, and it's English medium school.
Indian population in Dubai, where do they mainly come from?
All over.
It's South India and North India, everywhere. It's all.
You don't have a predominance of South Indians?
Not really. Maybe 60%, that's it.
Even our nursery schools are teaching Arabic now, where I teach. We have Arabic lessons, but it's nice. They enjoy learning new words.
Bombay. There's no predominance. Bombay.
Chennai. No, I'm Sriranga.
Sorry, Sriranga.
Living in Bombay.
Chennai.
You get
Madura.
We're going to Brindavan. Setting up.
Yeah,
in Madurai.
Very soon.
Madurai.